This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Good morning again. You are listening to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. Breakfast is served, the coffee is hot, and the doctors are definitely talking. I am your co-host for this week, Dr. Mike Karuchak. I alternate weeks with my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz. So this week I'm here, next week he'll be here. Thanks so much for tuning in. We have a lot of stuff to talk about today. One of the things that you will discover about doctors if you get to know them or if you already know them is that if you put two or more doctors together in a room, at a party somewhere perhaps, or a doctor's lounge even, they will start talking to each other about their patients. Sadly, that happens a lot less than it used to, because now we have so many other things we have to talk about in order to survive, like decreasing reimbursements and DRGs and maintenance of certification and privacy requirements and high tech and EMRs and all of these things, which are definitely squeezing out patients. There's not enough time in the day to talk about patients, to think about patients, and do all of the things that doctors have to do to survive. And so all of these things that the government and the IT community are forcing us to do in order to survive leaves us with less and less brain energy, intellectual energy, and spiritual energy to deal with patients. And that is a very, very sad, unfortunate thing. So I'm going to start the show off today actually talking to you about a patient. And poor David Moxley here at the board is going to be forced to listen to this for the entire hour. But I'm going to tell you about a patient. This patient had the worst case of a code EO5.01 I think I've ever seen. Walked right in the door, and I said, oh, my gosh, from across the room. I said, that is the worst case of EO5.01 I've ever seen. I immediately talked to that patient, took them to the operating room, and performed a 67032. And it was a tough case. It was a rocky recovery. It was complicated by an E89.0. And because of the patient's history of a Z87.891, had a complication of a T81.30XA. Isn't that something? Have you ever heard such a thing?
Sounds bad to me.
I'm telling you what, that scared me to death, that T81.30XA.
Was he ambulatory after you did all this?
What? No, I don't think so. I don't know, because there's no code for that, so I can't even tell you if he was ambulatory or not. But he was in the hospital for weeks. He finally got an I-82.49, I'm sorry, see, you said the code wrong. Don't throw me in jail. I-82.419. And then, you know, the whole thing made sense weeks later when I saw him back in the office and he finally told me about his Z65.2. Then it all made sense. And we finally got that patient better and sent him on his way. So does that sound kind of silly to you? Does it sound ridiculous and inappropriate and unfortunate to take a patient and reduce them to a bunch of numbers? Can numbers tell you all that there is to know about a living, breathing human being? I certainly don't think so. I don't know of any other physicians that think so. But that crazy story that I just made up, although the ICD-10 codes are real, this is a new coding system that has been proposed for several years. It was delayed last year, and now it looks like, based on the hearing that was held on Capitol Hill last week, that all of medicine in the United States will be forced to convert from our current system of ICD-9 coding. Right? ICD stands for International Classification of Diagnoses or something similar to that. But we're supposed to move up from the current system of ICD-9, which has been in place for a long time, 30 years, and move to ICD-10. Now, the problem is you think we'll go to version 10 from version 9, no big deal. Well, it is a big deal because the coding system is completely different. The formatting is completely different. The structure is completely different. And you say, well, okay, that happens once in a while. We have EMRs now. We have computers now. That shouldn't be a big deal, except it's a huge deal because we are the only country in the world which, if and when we convert to ICD-10, will be using that code for billing and payment. No other country that uses ICD-10, as these folks on Capitol Hill testifying like to brag or like to browbeat us in the United States for not using ICD-10, none of those other countries use ICD-10 for billing. And so you know what happens David, right? Anytime you upgrade anything, right? I don't care if it's Microsoft Office on your own computer or something more complicated than that, that anytime you do an upgrade, there are glitches. There are problems. And if this upgrade produces the glitches we expect it to, then the entire system of payment is going to be severely disrupted. CMS even acknowledges that. CMS advises doctors on its website, cms.gov, that when ICD-10 comes around, you, doctor, need to get a loan. You need to get a loan to float your practice for 3 to 6 months because of the anticipated disruption of payments from CMS and private insurers that even the supporters of the law, even the government itself, acknowledges are going to happen. And that's simply unacceptable because most practices don't have the financial collateral to secure that kind of loan. And not to mention that you have to pay that loan back and you're going to sustain losses. And most of that you're not ever going to recover. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. This isn't just going to be a delay in payment. It's going to be a financial loss.
Michael, if I could ask of a course. Question right quick. We make this statement on many, many, many of our shows all the time. Obviously, this is a big deal.
Yes, indeed.
This falls under big deal. We ask this question, or we make the statement, follow the money.
Yep.
Okay, who's at the bottom line of this making money out of it?
Well, the answer, David, is easy to see if you, and you'll know at the end of the show. If you watch the hearing, and I watched as much of it as I could, and I reviewed all of the written testimony from the 7 witnesses who testified. Now, and it's clear that there are going to be winners and losers in ICD-10, just like there are winners and losers in any government declaration or any passage of a law or regulation or statute or anything that forces us to behave differently than we would wish to. And, of course, there is. We had the big winners are, of course, the IT companies. Right. Athena Health testified at this hearing. 3M testified at this hearing. Academic physicians testified at this hearing. And, of course, all of those folks were in lockstep and had the same message that ICD-10 is going to be a wonderful thing, that ICD-10, and this is almost a quote, is going to be the language that doctors use to communicate with each other. And it was that quote that inspired me to come up with that silly medical story that was all impersonal codes. Is if it's going to be the language, I guess that's it. You know, they were lamenting that ICD-9 doesn't tell you what's wrong with the patient. That's a quote. ICD-9, right, the current coding system, doesn't tell you what's wrong with the patient. Well, of course, it doesn't tell you what's wrong with the patient. If you want to know what's wrong with the patient, you know, there's additional information in that medical record that's in English, or Spanish, or French, or Russian, or whatever language your doctor communicates in or speaks. But go read the notes. Go read the medical record if you want to know more than the codes. The codes aren't meant to replace a medical record. The codes are nothing more than a billing and collection vehicle. And if you disrupt that, you get no improvement in patient care, but a huge disruption in doctors' ability to care for patients because we can't remain financially solvent with the interruptions in payment that even the supporters of this system are telling us to expect. So, of course, as I was, preparing the show, I was going to have a different topic. I was going to talk about ambulatory surgery centers this week, and if we have a couple of minutes at the end, maybe I'll mention it or save it for another week. And I was just going to mention the ICD-10 sort of in passing, sort of a, this week in the news sort of thing. But as I got into reading the written testimonies of each of these 7 witnesses that were called, I said, oh, my gosh, this is incredible, the things that were said and the things that seemed to be accepted as truth. And, of course, at the last minute and costing myself half a night's sleep last night, I decided I was going to change topics and talk entirely about this conversion from ICD-9, the current coding system, to ICD-10. So a little background on that. ICD-10 was proposed a long time ago. It was actually proposed in the 90s and has been gradually adopted by many other countries, but not for the purposes of payment and billing. And the participation by physicians, as I understand it, is therefore optional. That means it's out there for research. You want to track something, you want to do something, you want to use an enhanced coding system, fine. But it's not going to be it's not obligatory in other countries as it will be here if it's allowed to go on, and is not linked to billing and payment and a doctor's financial survival as it will be here. So for the rest of the first segment, I'll start this whole thing in earnest in the second segment, but a couple of anecdotes and some introductory stuff. This week, Atlanta dodged a bullet in terms of the weather. And there's a reason I'm telling this story. And again, remember that part of my mission on this program is to educate you, the listener, for which we are grateful, that how doctors think, who we are, right? How we think, why we do what we do, how we do what we do, and the situation that we live in, because there are so many misconceptions. Some of them are spread intentionally. Some of them are unintentional and innocent. But the more that I've been a doctor over low these 25 years, the more I'm struck on occasion with, how badly misunderstood physicians are. And again, some of that's intentional, some of it's not. But it stands to reason, it's reasonable to tell a story about what happens to a physician's office when there is a weather-related outage. Fortunately, we missed that this year, right? We had the cold air, we had the moisture, but fortunately, in Atlanta proper, not so much north where they did get some bad stuff, but in the metro Atlanta area, the cold weather and the moisture never seemed to hit the roads at the same place at the same time, thank heaven. Because doctors... And this is a part, we have to dispel a myth here. Doctors are a lot like plumbers or electricians or hairdressers or landscapers because if we're not working, there's no money coming in. If we're not under a sink fixing a leak or cutting somebody's hair, so to speak, or wiring a new electrical socket, there's no money coming in. And yet the overhead's the same. Right? We got to pay rent the same as everybody else. We got to do payroll just the same. So when bad weather comes and closes our offices, as they did for 6 working days last year, it is a 6-figure financial devastation when you count 7 doctors, 8 doctors across 4 or 5 offices in our practice, 3 offices. That is financial devastation. We're still feeling the pain from last year and the loss of that revenue. And, this is not some big ethereal corporation. It's not like you're working for the man here, that this money just disappears and appears into thin air and your salary continues without interruption. That's absolutely not true. This is money that is directly out of our pockets. You think, well, just reschedule those patients. You'll get them all back in. Well, no, you don't. We only have so many appointment slots in a week. Those slots are generally full all the time, several days in advance. So there's really no opportunity to recover that lost time. If we lose a day of appointments, there is no way to recover that. Last year we even tried working some Saturday mornings to recover some of that. We may have gotten a little, but not very much. So again, the introductory segment's lesson is that we can only work so hard. Right? There are only so many hours in a day and so many days in a week. So as Medicare payments decrease, insurance payments decrease, expenses related to malpractice, escalating rents, increasing technology expenses, increasing regulatory compliance expenses, which is huge, we really have nowhere to go to recover that money. I mean, once you get up to 60 hours or more in a work week, there's really no room to go any farther. And again, world's full of misconceptions, right? And here's one more little story I'm going to tell you. I don't think I've told this before. I hope not. But I was on call, and it was a weekend. It was a Saturday or a Sunday, and I don't remember which. But I had a patient call, right? I get a message from the answering service. It was one of your patients. Need a call back. No problem. I was not busy doing something else. Just picked up the phone within 30 seconds, called the patient back. And, she's a very nice lady. She was post-op, I think, from a thyroid surgery. But her first remark to me on the phone was, well, gee, doctor, thanks so much for calling me back so quick. You must not be playing golf today. You must not be playing golf today, doc. Yeah, well, that's true. I wasn't playing golf today. And in fact, this cliche of all doctors playing golf on Wednesday afternoons or weekends or any time is about a generation out of date. I'm not sure it was ever completely true, I had to go and find my golf clubs. I haven't even seen my golf clubs in 2 or 3 years. I do own a cheap set of golf clubs, but I found them, just to tell you where they were. They were down in the basement, covered up by a bunch of beach toys that the kids used when they were little, hadn't been touched in years. It's covered in dust, and it's laying on its side, and it's a mess down there. But I promise you that, this whole cliche of doctors playing golf is out of date. And you think, well, that's stupid. Why are you bringing that up? It is still a widely held cliche. And even as recently as November of 2013, at one of the biggest health information technology events in the Atlanta area, an all-day event, the keynote speaker The keynote speaker, talking to an audience where he didn't think there were any doctors, just IT people, was talking about mobile health and saying, well, the way to sell mobile health to doctors is to tell them that they can check a patient's blood sugar while they're playing golf. So I'm going to buy mobile technology so that I can play golf more. So these people are totally out of touch with who doctors are and what we do. We're coming up on the end of the first segment. You are listening to The Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship.
I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak, co-host of The Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. Please join us in the fight to save the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper and go to this website, www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on The Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's D-O-C-S, the number 4, patientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
We're back. You are listening to The Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. I'm your co-host, Dr. Mike Karuchak. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today. We hope to make that worth your while here on America's Web Radio. Today's topic, changed at the last minute and costing me most of a night's sleep, is the ICD-10 hearings, which were held on Capitol Hill last week. So what is ICD-10 anyway? The ICD coding system is a system of codes that physicians and other providers are required to use when we bill insurers or Medicare or anyone else who's paying for care as part of what we call diagnosis codes, right? So if you have, you know, a goiter, you know, I can't just say you have a goiter. I have to report that code for an enlarged thyroid gland. And when I report that I removed that goiter with a thyroidectomy, I can't just say I did a total thyroidectomy. I have to report that with a 5-digit CPT code. And the proposal, which has actually been on the table for a long time and delayed at least 3 or 4 times, has been to convert from ICD-9, which is a well-understood, well-oiled, far from perfect, but at least well-understood and well-embedded system in terms of describing diagnoses, to ICD-10, which is a complete restructuring. It's not just a natural progression of version 1.0 to version 2.0. It's not a natural extension of what came before it. It is a completely blow it up and start over kind of system. And the fear among, you know, real doctors who treat real patients and have to pay real rent and real payroll is that this is going to disrupt the delivery of healthcare and the payment for healthcare so badly that the whole thing is going to very rapidly fall into chaos. And even the supporters acknowledge that this is going to happen at some level. Even CMS suggests, as we mentioned in the last segment, that physicians need to get a loan to cover 3 or 6 months of operating expenses in anticipation of the payment disruptions that are likely to occur. So what I've decided to do for the rest of the show, for better or for worse, is to play some highlights from this 2-hour and 15-minute hearing, mainly audio clips from the testimony of the 7 witnesses who testified at this. Those are Dr. Mike Burgess. He's one of the moderators. Dr. Edward Burke. Okay, so the witness is Dr. Edward Burke. He's an internist in rural Missouri. We have Richard Averill, who is a director of public policy at 3M. Sue Bowman, senior director of coding policy and compliance at the American Health Information Management Association. Folks from other IT companies, an academic physician. And finally, one hero, Dr. William Terry, who is a private practice urologist in Mobile, Alabama, who describes himself as working 13 hours a day. He was the only witness to testify that ICD-10 is going to be a disaster. Everyone else was supporting ICD-10, including the first physician, Dr. Edward Burke, and we'll take apart what he had to say as well. Now, what I've got is 23 audio clips, and I've got them sort of informally recorded on my iPad here. This was a very low-tech situation, so I'm going to apologize in advance for some hiccups that are going to invariably occur. But the first two that we've got here are from the head congressman on the panel, Joseph Pitts, a Republican from Pennsylvania, and Gene Green, a Democrat from Texas. And it's clear, listening to their comments, that the fix is in what this committee is going to say, because they made their opinions abundantly clear. So here we go. Hopefully this will go right. This is Congressman Joe Pitts.
Employees, and to prepare again for the transition. The United States currently lags behind most of the rest of the world, which already uses the updated ICD-10. ICD-9 is more than 30 years old and does not capture the data needed to track changes in modern medical practice and healthcare delivery.
So, you know, this is almost like if you were starting a trial and the judge got up and said, the purpose of these proceedings is to find the defendant guilty. So there's so much for objectivity, so much for giving witnesses a chance to give their testimony in an unbiased setting. Here's Congressman Green.
Provisions to move our health care system from one that rewards value instead of just volume. There's still a lot of work to do to improve our system in this regard, and adopting ICD-10 without delay would help move this forward.
Okay, so we got the same thing. So Congressman Green goes on to, tout the party line, tout the propaganda about ICD-10. So just to lay that out for you so you know what to expect, here is what the supporters of ICD-10 coding say is going to happen, all the good stuff that's going to happen, that we are supposedly, allegedly, going to see an improvement in patient safety. We're going to see improvements in patient outcomes. And although ICD-10 may cost an additional $1.5 billion per year to implement and maintain, the savings in terms of more efficient care, I suppose, less fraud, less waste, is $7.7 billion a year, or a margin of roughly $6 billion a year, $5.8 billion a year, in net gain from using ICD-10. So better safety, better outcomes, savings. Because of more accurate payments, sure, believe that, better disease management, decrease in fraudulent claims, and a decrease in rejected claims. And that all sounds great. If you just take it at face value, sure. I mean, if you believe all of that, then why wouldn't you want ICD-10? Well, here's the problem. The problem is none of those claims have a shred of evidence to support that they are actually true. Right? I mean, conspicuously absent from this entire 2-hour and 15-minute hearing was any mention of prior experience with ICD-10 from all these other countries who supposedly use ICD-10, right? Because we're supposed to get with it. We're supposed to get with the 21st century. We're supposed to catch up with all these other countries. Why is America lagging behind on ICD-10? Well, because there's no evidence to support that ICD-10 does any good. There's no evidence to support that it saves money. No evidence to support it makes patient care better. No evidence to support that it improves patient safety. No evidence to support that it reduces fraudulent claims. In fact, I would submit that the more complicated a system is, the easier it is to hide fraudulent claims inside it, because it's going to be harder to search them out. I mean, you can pick a code and it'll look more legitimate, but it's more likely to get fraudulent claims than less. And decreased rejected claims, seriously, I don't think anybody who actually touches patients for a living and has to manage the finances of their practice believes that for 1 minute. Nonetheless, that's how the hearings began. Now we'll go on to Representative Mike Burgess, a Republican from Texas and a physician. So here's what a physician has to say about this, and this was probably the first, you know, words of half decent wisdom that I heard, not from a witness, mind you.
To the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and if you will pardon me, that does appear to be a weak link in the chain, because from healthcare.gov to the Sunshine Act reporting website, when CMS flips a switch, something breaks, And it's invariable, and it's happened time.
Okay, so that pretty much covers the ground right there. When CMS throws a switch, something breaks. So, some voice of reason in that room. Not very much, but a little bit here and there, and we'll try to highlight where that comes from. So, next, we're going to cover the testimony of Dr. Edward Burke. Edward Burke is an internist in rural Missouri, and he describes his practice as, we see it all. They got two doctors, they've got, I think, two nurse practitioners, a pediatric nurse practitioner, and a mental health professional. So, clearly, they are staffed to cover the widest range of stuff that might walk through the door. It's incredible what he had to say about ICD-10. The claims are almost too good to be true. Just listen to this.
We can tackle in full confidence. What we were unprepared for was how seamless it was. On a busy Monday morning, October 7th, 2013, we took on ICD-10 and we haven't looked back. We did not have special training. We did not spend any money in preparation. We did not see less patients and our practice did not suffer. As providers, it was not frustrating or scary. It just was.
Okay, listen to the next one.
We chose to implement highly effective software when we made the transition to electronic medical records. Our practice manager looked at some of the things coming in the near future and chose software that would grow and expand to what we would need.
And finally,
there are several pieces that must come together in order to complete one simple procedure. Speaking the same language is crucial to patient care. ICD-10 is that language.
Okay, did you catch that? Very important. Doctors need a universal language to communicate about patients, and ICD-10 is that language. So, if I understand him correctly, we don't need to talk about patients as flesh and blood human beings anymore. We can, you know, thanks to the wonder of ICD-10, we can reduce patients to mere numbers. And so that makes that goofy little fake patient that I presented at the beginning of the hour not so far-fetched if you take what Dr. Burke says at face value. He says ICD-10 didn't cost them any money, it didn't cost them any time, and it didn't cause them any problem. At Friday at 5 o'clock, they closed down ICD-9. Monday morning at 8 or 9 o'clock, they brought up ICD-10, and they were hardly aware of it, if you believe what he had to say, that the EMR vendor, perfect in every way, we all believe that, it was perfect in this whole thing. They handled it all behind the scenes, and all these folks had to do was keep seeing patients and document the way they always have, and the codes just happened. It just happened in the background. So, obviously, a dream world, I would suggest, that this person lives in. Here's one more.
It wasn't expensive, and it wasn't time-consuming. Clinical documentation did not change. We spend the same amount of time documenting to support ICD-10 as we did with the ICD-9.
Procedures were not even envisioned.
Okay, that was into the next clip. So again, when they got to the question and answer session of the hearing, Dr. Burke had some even more interesting things to say. I award him Doofus of the Week, and you will see why. But let's keep moving on. That was Dr. Burke. Now we're going to move on to the testimony of Richard Averill, the director of public policy at 3M. And this is what he had to say about ICD-10.
It reflects medicine of a bygone era. With ICD-9, we often don't know what's really wrong with the patient or what procedures were performed.
Okay, did you catch that? With ICD-9, we don't really know what was wrong with the patient, and we don't know what procedures were performed. Well, here's a little suggestion, Mr. Averill. Why don't you go to the medical record, read some English, or Spanish, or French, or Russian, and use language instead of numbers, and you might just find out what you want to know. Keep going.
ICD-9 codes like a repair of an unspecified artery by an unspecified technique are virtually useless for establishing fair payment levels and evaluating outcomes.
Okay, so let's keep going. I'm going to get lost here.
Is that proposed by President Reagan and Speaker O'Neill? I have worked with CMS to maintain and update the DRGs. The biggest frustration with DRG updates is that proposed DRG modifications from the healthcare industry often cannot even be evaluated because there are no ICD-9 codes available.
Okay, so if he wants another ICD-9 for a DRG code, Just add one. I mean, again, why do we have to throw everything out and start over? They do make a legitimate point here, and I do have to concede a little legitimate point, is that the ICD-9 structure only has 5 digits, right? That doesn't hold enough space in it to expand diagnostic codes or to break down generalized diagnostic codes into more specific ones. But, you know, and why not just add a digit if they need more stuff for ICD-10? So we're at the end of the second segment. We will pick this up in segment 3. You are listening to The Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
Did you miss the show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship.
I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak, co-host of The Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. Please join us in the fight to save the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper and go to this website, www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Back once again, you are listening to The Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. I am your co-host, your host for this week, Dr. Michael Karuchak, an ear, nose, and throat physician based here in Atlanta, Georgia, coming to you on America's Web Radio. The topic of today's show is a new coding system that the government and IT companies combine to force down the throats of practicing physicians will likely cause incredible disruption in billing, coding, and payment, and is probably going to be a real disaster when it hits, which is now scheduled for October 1st, 2015. Last week on Capitol Hill were hearings held, and seven witnesses were brought to testify. We are reviewing the results of that hearing because of the incredible things that were said that were seemingly accepted as truth. And you get some incredible, frightening insights into who the minds are that are running the show, that are making these decisions, who they're asking for expert opinions, and what those opinions actually are. And as David said at the beginning of the show, if you want to know why people say what they say, follow the money. And in these next two witnesses that we're going to talk about in terms of their testimony, you're not going to need to follow the money very far. We were talking about the testimony of Richard Averill, Director of Public Policy at 3M. Well, what does 3M do for a living? They said, well, they do a lot of things, right? Scotch tape, we all know. But they also sell health IT products. So it stands to reason, it's obvious, that if ICD-10 goes through, that they and other health information technology companies are poised to make another ton of money, right? It's kind of like meaningful use in the stimulus program for health IT all over again, because if ICD-10 truly comes to pass, it is yet another change in the regulations that makes the use of an EMR all but totally required, even beyond the requirements of the meaningful use program. So if you want to stay with paper charts, not only do you have to face decreasing reimbursements from CMS, now you have to face an impossible coding system that, you know, if you're going to do it the old way with a paper super bill, it's not going to happen. I went to the web. I think it was even CMS.gov. I'm not sure exactly where I got it, but I had a look at the encounter forms that that are used in ICD-9 versus ICD-10. Now, what's an encounter form? In the old days of paper charts, we used to send diagnosis codes and procedure codes to our billers, to bill insurance, with a single-page document, which we called a super bill or an encounter form, that had all of the ICD-9 and CPT codes that were required to cover the coding for 95% of the patients that walked through the door. Now, for 20 or 30 years, as long as ICD-9 has been around, that has been a single sheet of paper. Very manageable. You pretty much learn where all the numbers are. And so coding in that system was fairly straightforward, or at least as straightforward as it can be. I'm not sure I would really call it straightforward, but at least it was manageable. Under ICD-10, that single page document, that single page coding and billing document becomes a 10 page coding and billing document. So now instead of printing one extra sheet of paper for every patient, we got to print 10 and probably spend 3 or 4 extra minutes combing through all of those hundreds of codes to try and find the right one so that you can actually get paid for the work that you did. So moving on in this testimony, we covered Mr. Averill. We're now going to move on to the testimony of one Susan Bowman, the Senior Director of Coding Policy and Compliance at the American Health Information Management Association. Now, in a group called the American Health Information Management Association, what do you suppose their stance on ICD-10 would be as yet another organization that stands to financially gain from the advent of ICD-10? So let's see what Ms. Bowman had to say. And I'm going to shuffle here a little bit. I got to move papers and I got to get my iPad back up here and try to play something for you. So here we go. Ms. Bowman.
The vast majority of the healthcare community, hospitals, health plans.
That's not her. Try again. Here we go. That's not her. Try again. Here we go.
To deteriorate while the demand continues to increase for high-quality data, data that can support healthcare initiatives such as the Meaningful Use Electronic Health Record Incentive Program, new payment models, and other initiatives aimed at improving quality and patient safety and decreasing costs.
Okay, so I'm sorry, that one was kind of hard to pull up. But she's talking about an increasing demand for high-quality data for things such as the Meaningful Use Program. That makes no sense to me at all. I'm pretty familiar with Meaningful Use. I don't know of any demand through Meaningful Use of high-quality ICD coding data. And again, that's not proven. I mean, who's making those demands? Where are those demands coming from? You know, this testimony from all of these witnesses, especially the non-physicians, is full of these generalities, vague generalities that pass as truth when in fact they're totally unproven. There's no basis. Who's asking for it? Tell me who it is. It's not out there. I mean, it's just a myth. All right, let's keep going. This is still Ms. Bowman.
Surveillance of pandemic threats such as Ebola, which does not have its own ICD-9 code.
Okay. So she makes a point here that is valid and have to concede, and that is that, you know, if you are in the business of tracking epidemics, it would be nice to have a diagnostic coding system that allows you to track those epidemics at a specific level. And I can see in my mind's eye, unlike all this other garbage, I can see in my mind's eye where if you had a code for Ebola and a code for influenza broken down and a code for measles, right, because we got that outbreak broken down, that people could monitor the submission of ICD-9 codes and pick up epidemics and figure out where they were geographically pretty quickly. Probably not more lag time than, you know, a couple of days, depending on how fast the providers are submitting the codes. So you do have to concede I have to concede, in order to maintain some credibility, that yes, it would be nice to have a more elaborate coding system for things like tracking epidemics. But you don't have to expand the entire coding system from 13 or 16,000 codes to 68,000 just to do something like that. Create a few extra codes, add a digit to ICD-9, throw in some breakdowns of some of these infectious and communicable diseases, and see if it works. It probably would do fine without this kind of disruption of the rest of the healthcare system. And again, I'm asking the same thing. Is there ICD-10 has been in force for many years in a lot of other countries. How come nobody's pointing to their success stories? How come we don't have any stories in this testimony about tracking Ebola in Africa or other nearby countries, or tracking influenza in other countries, or measles, or other communicable diseases? Why don't they give those examples? Because there aren't any. There is no examples out there. There are no success stories related to ICD-10 out there. And so all of these arguments, it's like meaningful use all over again. It's like electronic medical records and meaningful use all over again, where you get a bunch of so-called experts, self-designated experts, talking about how wonderful this stuff has to be, how intuitively obvious it is, with no data to back it up. Just like EMR, just like health information technology. There's no data to prove that it improves patient safety, efficacy of care, efficiency, any of that stuff. And yet the IT community considered all those things as axiomatic. So it's same song, different verse, bunch of government witnesses, experts, all, you know, assuming that this stuff is obvious, when in fact it's not, and when in fact I would say that just the opposite is true in most cases. All right, keep going here. This is still Ms. Bowman.
As a concern. The expanded clinical detail in ICD-10 was requested by the medical community because these clinical distinctions were felt to be important to capture.
What? What? Wait, say that again. They were requested by the medical community? Where? Haven't seen that. I'd love to see what's the data that backs that up. Again, another myth they put out there. Everyone accepts it is true. I'd love to know who. Who was it that did this? She made some reference to other medical professional organizations, but I would love to see the specifics. Which organization asked for what codes in the ICD-10 system? I hate to, you know, say people aren't telling the truth, but I would love to see what backs that up. All right, we're still on Ms. Bowman. More highlights.
Physician organizations. Just as the size of a dictionary or phone book does not make it more difficult to look up a word or a phone number, an increased number of codes does not make it harder to find the right code. Increased specificity, clinical accuracy, and a logical structure actually facilitate rather than complicate the use of a code set.
Okay. Let's break that one down a little bit. She got a little bit more sophisticated in the deception there. So we need to break this down a little bit, because on the surface, her argument looks pretty good, right? It's a dictionary, right? The ICD coding system's nothing more than a dictionary or a phone book, right? And we know that you can search a big phone book as easily as you can search a small one if you've got a computer to do it. You can easily search a bigger dictionary rather than a smaller dictionary if you have a computer to do it. So it sounds like it sounds like a valid point, doesn't it? Except it's not, because we have to break that down and really think about what's the difference between a dictionary and a phone book, right? What do they have in common that ICD-10 codes do not have in common? So think about this carefully, because the distinction is subtle, but it's very, very important. Phone books and dictionaries don't make changes until the outside world makes the change. For instance, right, when Xeroxing was added to the dictionary, right, that was 20, 30 years ago when photocopying something, we don't photocopy things anymore, right, we Xerox them, right, that verb came into the vernacular. That didn't get added to a dictionary, right, Xerox as a verb, until the people concerned, right, the people over whom that dictionary has jurisdiction, were already using the word. The dictionary made the change after the fact, right? Phone books are the same way. Right? If a new person with a new phone number comes in the phone book doesn't make the change until the actual living, breathing person has that phone number and has the address in the phone book that goes along with that phone number. The ICD coding system works in exactly the opposite direction. The ICD-10 creates the entry first, and the people in the real world have to conform to that. So the direction of action is in the opposite direction. Now, we're up in the end of the third segment. We're going to hit the fourth segment. We're going to explain that, and then we're going to hear the testimony of the one physician who was actually making some sense here. You are listening to The Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your health care freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's D-O-C-S, the number 4, patientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
We're back. You are listening to The Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio, entering the fourth and final segment of the show. We've got lots of good stuff to cover. Thank you for sticking with us. Here we go. We are talking about the ICD-10 hearings and all of the ridiculous misconceptions or intentional false truths that were put out at that proceeding. We were talking about the testimony of one Susan Bowman, who is the Senior Director of Coding Policy and Compliance at the American Health Information Management Association. And we were discussing a point that she made that on the surface sounds quite valid, that expanding the diagnosis coding system is no different than a bigger dictionary, which is no problem to us, or is no different than a bigger phone book, which is no problem to us, especially if you have a computer to search it. What's the big deal? It just operates in the background. Except that it doesn't operate in the background. And we talked about at the very end of the last segment how phone books and dictionaries are different than ICD-10 codes, because phone books and dictionaries don't make a change until the folks over whom those documents have sort of jurisdiction, if you will, have already made the change themselves. So we don't add a word like Xeroxing to the dictionary until people are already using it. And we don't add a word like Google something, right? 25 years ago, if I said go Google something, you'd think I was nuts. Here in 2015, we know what Googling is. It's a new verb. Well, that doesn't get added to the dictionary until the people over whom the dictionary applies make the change themselves. Those documents are retrospective. They're reactive, not proactive, right? What if phone books worked like ICD-9. I'm going to use David here as an example. He's so lucky. So if a new phone book came out that had different names and addresses with different phone numbers at different addresses, I might walk down the street one day and see David here packing his bags and a moving van backed up to his house, and I say, David, where are you going? What are you doing? He says, well, the new phone book came out and said that I live on Main Street now instead of Market Street, so I guess I got to move. Right, that's what would happen if phone books worked the same as ICD-10 or ICD-9, for that matter. You know, what about dictionaries? What if dictionaries worked the same as ICD-10 codes, or the conversion from ICD-9 to ICD-10? You know, a bunch of lexicographers, right? That's the fancy term for people that write dictionaries. Lexicographers. My son Andrew needs to memorize that word because he's getting ready for his SATs. But lexicographers would get together and say, you know what, it's no longer specific enough to say somebody got hit by a car. We're going to come up with a different word for somebody who gets hit by a car versus somebody who gets hit by an SUV versus somebody who gets hit by a truck. And when we come out with a new dictionary, no one's allowed to say they got hit by a car anymore. They have to say, you know, they got – you know, kerfluffled if they got hit by a car, and conniptioned if they got hit by a truck, and, you know, some other crazy word if they got hit by an SUV or a motorcycle or something. And that is obviously ridiculous, but that is exactly what the conversion to ICD-9 to ICD-10 does. And, you know, in all fairness, even, you know, phone books are getting more complicated because we got home phone, cell phone, business phone, we got email, Twitter, Facebook. It has gotten more complicated and troublesome because there's several different ways to reach people. So, you know, even the phone book concept at face value isn't as simple as it used to be. So let's go on. Now I've kind of lost my place here in my prompts. I hope I find the right one here. We're still with Susan Bowman.
The healthcare industry has had more than 6 years to prepare.
I'm ahead of myself. Let's go back one.
There is a growing demand for more complete and accurate documentation. And the impact of clinical documentation improvement efforts can be mitigated through the use of electronic documentation capture tools, such as documentation prompts and electronic health record systems.
Okay, so she suggests that, again, electronic medical records are going to be the panacea to all these problems, right? Yes, we need more accurate data. We need more detailed data. We need better documentation in the chart notes themselves, but that's no problem. That's no problem because EMRs are going to do that work for us. They're going to prompt us to enter what it is we're supposed to enter. Well, guess what? That concept has a big problem in that anytime you raise the bar in terms of data capture and documentation, that costs money. Right? That's going to cost somebody money, and that cost is not mitigated by an EMR prompt. Because I still got to see that prompt, I got to read that prompt, and I got to follow that prompt. And if you put enough of those in a system, it is going to raise the amount of time it takes me to see a patient significantly. That means I see fewer patients in a day. That reduces access to care, raises cost. And right now, you know, do the IT companies care? No, they're not bearing that cost. Perhaps they're making money, right? It all falls on the doctors and the patients. And the folks in government couldn't care less. The folks in the IT companies as a group couldn't care less because they think that silly concepts like documentation prompts are going to fix this. It's not going to fix it, right? It's not IT companies don't care, administrators don't care, insurance companies don't care, and all of this garbage, documentation prompts, call it what you want to, distracts doctors away from the fundamental job of taking care of patients. And that's the big problem. You know, just look at, I got in front of me here, and I may be on the web feed here, visual. This is two sheets of paper that talk about ICD-9 codes for something very simple in my world, which is middle ear infections, right? Middle ear infections don't take very many codes, but just one category of middle ear infections. This isn't even the whole picture, right? This is a subcategory called non-suppurative otitis media. That means fluid in the middle ear space that's not pussed out, it's not infected, right? That is covered by four or five codes in ICD-9. That is expanded to 44 codes in ICD-10. And, you know, you can't, even if you're looking at the video feed for the show, you can't see how dense this is. You can't see how complicated it is. And the fact is they've got it arranged spatially in such a confusing way that I looked at this for 10 or 15 minutes and I still can't figure out, you know, how I would code a simple ear infection based on how these codes are laid out. And then even that's not enough. There's even these additional codes that you're supposed to use for exposure to environmental tobacco smoke in the perinatal period, history of tobacco use, occupational exposure to environmental tobacco smoke, and then tobacco dependence and tobacco use. And I don't quite understand the difference between tobacco dependence and tobacco use. But, you know, ICD-10s make a big deal out of that difference. This is just crazy. I mean, we are not going to survive if this isn't modified in some way. Now, we are running short on time. I want to go to the testimony of the lone physician that made some sense. This is a Dr. Terry, and I'm going to have to flip forward here because I'm running out of time, but I want you to listen to the entirety of his testimony. We're going to have to skip over some other stuff. So this is testimony of Dr. William Terry, a private practice urologist in Mobile, Alabama, describes himself as working 13 hours a day, and he makes some great points in here about ICD-10, some of which we've already discussed. I'm going to let you listen to him because he said it better than I can. Now, I'm skipping forward. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to find it, but I think this is it.
Member Green, members of the committee, my name is is Dr. Jeff Terry, and I'm testifying today as a member of the American Urological Association and as a practicing urologist who puts in 13 hours a day taking care of patients in Mobile, Alabama. We thank you for this hearing very much. The AUA has a membership of 18,000 physicians and is also a member of the Alliance of Specialty Medicine. During the last Congress, I had the privilege of moderating an Alliance roundtable on ICD-10 where members of CMS were actually present. The AUA enters this debate on ICD-10 as an advocate for the patients and the physicians. As you hear testimony today, keep in mind the concerns of practicing physicians who want to preserve the all-important patient-physician relationship. And don't put the computer and statistics in the middle of this relationship. I know that you will weigh any proven patient care advantages of ICD-10 against the consequences of a flawed...
Okay, I know that you will weigh the proven advantages. So even he's making the distinction that that most of the advantages that are being touted aren't proven.
Epidemiological data. The United States is the only country that uses it as part of the billing system. ICD-10 is planned to replace ICD-9 all in one day. Our present system has 13,000 codes, where ICD-10 will have anywhere between 68 and 87,000 codes, and the United States is the only country that uses all of these codes. The other countries use about a fifth of that number. Experts estimate physicians should plan on a 3-4% increase in time per patient encounter merely to document the correct code. The coding guidelines for ICD-10 are more complex, and those who do not fully understand them will fail to document correctly and not be paid. Proponents of ICD-10 say the increased specificity will improve clinical data and improve quality. These potential benefits are not documented. However, the cost of ICD-10 is well documented for physicians who already face increased cost in complying with EHR incentive programs, the PQRS quality program, the value-based payment modifier program, not to mention the annual threat of SGR cuts and the 2% sequestration cut that we already have. Now we are faced with the costly, unfunded mandate of ICD-10 that will certainly put some physicians out of business. Physicians are overwhelmed with the tsunami of regulations that have significantly increased the work for our practices. Physicians are retiring early, which could leave countless number of patients without a doctor. Based on data in other countries, all physicians will be forced to reduce the number of patients that they see when ICD-10 is implemented, which can last for more than a year, resulting in less efficient practices and making it difficult.
Okay, we're running out of time. There's one more clip I want to play for you. But you get the idea. Dr. Terry is a hero in my eyes. He got up there and faced, six other witnesses, some of them a little bit hostile and some of them a little bit arrogant, and faced them down pretty good, I think. I tip my hat to him. Now I got one more thing I want to do, and I hope I can find this clip. But remember, I told you I was going to promise you some more outrageous stuff. From this, I think it's Dr. Burke. Yeah, because he did try to come up with one real world example of how ICD-10 would help patients in the real world. So let's see, that is like third from the end. I hope this is it.
I guess Dr. Burke, first question is, how many additional codes did you feel you had to deal with in your practice compared to ICD-9? Not many more. Maybe about 10 or 20% more. Okay. Well, okay. Then,
okay, so doesn't sound like he really had an answer to that question. So it sounds like he's pretty detached from ICD-10, even though he's here testifying about it.
Let me just interject that I very respectfully.
Yeah, sorry, we're running out of time here. One more try. All right, we're out of time. Let's just say that Dr. Burke's best rendition of how ICD-10 would help patients was to say that if he documented which leg hurt, that if a patient called up, he wouldn't have to ask the patient any questions. He could just go to the code and know everything there was to know about the patient, that ICD-10 allowed him to talk to patients less. Sorry I couldn't get that up. We are out of time. We'll finish this next time. You are listening to The Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
This is America's Web Radio.com. the best in chat radio designed just for you.